label us left or right. I'm American, not looking for a wall, but we came to fight. I'm American. So-
Welcome to the BSJ Podcast, episode 10, the season one finale. I am your host, the American Redneck, Buckshot Jones. As always, this podcast will be talking to independent professional wrestlers and promoters about their careers and about independent professional wrestling in general. My guest today is a guy I met during my time in the ICWF. He helped me with some of my training, gave me lots of good advice. When I got to the biz, we worked together in several promotions. Together, he's a former tag team partner, rival. My guest today, the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson.
What's up, Mr. Show, Jones? How you doing today there, Mr. Jones, I presume?
I'm doing all right. You know, I can't complain. Usually, I'll ask everybody how they're doing, you know, during the pandemic and all this chaos, but you got other issues going on, so we won't go there right now. That's a personal issue with you.
I appreciate that, brother. But other than that, I'm doing okay. I mean, family's great. We're not sick. We're living day to day. But other than that, yeah, the pandemic's been kind of tough, but you know, I'm doing as good as I can.
Well, that's good. As I say at the top of the show, you helped me, you know, with some of my training, give me lots of good advice. Now, you personally, when did you decide to get in the business, and how did you go about getting into the business?
Wow, dude, that's a long story, man. Like, had to be 1991, and one of my buddies, Supernatural Jay Kilgore, the Canadian Hammer Jay Kilgore, he was wrestling. He started his training. He had been wrestling for about a year, and of course, you know, I was like, I wanted to get into it because, you know, coming up as a kid, I followed wrestling, but, you know, I didn't, you know, Hulk Hogan wasn't my favorite. Not like everybody else says it. Mine was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. He was built from Hawaii, of course. You have the Rockers flying around in there doing all this amazing stuff with Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty. And I'm like, man, that is something I would love to do. So about a year after he finished training with that school, had to be sometime in the middle of 1992, I asked him to train me. And I started training for the business to get into it in 1992. And man, the training I took back then, old school training, boy. They expected you to puke on the first few times after the thing, and I damn sure did after very few of the training sessions. I was like, oh my god, this sucks. Do I really want to stick to it? And man, it was tough, man. But in the end, in the long run, man, I enjoyed every minute that I had in the business, or, you know, whatever comes of my future in the business. But yeah, it was just really something. Because in there, when you're a wrestler, for 15 minutes, 10 minutes, however long your match is, the people in the outside world get to forget about their problems and cheer on the hero or boo the villain. And when you're in there, you're someone else. And even as a wrestler yourself, you don't got to worry about your personal problems. You don't got to worry about anything like that. You just take care of the guy who's in there with you and take care of getting that crowd either behind you or against you. And that's what I love doing, just being someone different.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of our issues from, you know, personalized, you know, that was our ring therapy. That was our getaway from, you know, like you said, you know, everyday modern problems that human beings go through. So Jay Kilgore, he was your trainer?
He was one of them, yep. The Canadian Hammer, Jay Kilgore, started it out. The Canadian Crusher helped me finish it up. I had a couple different trainers, but they got me into, you know, to the business when I was very, you know, young, and they had been in there. I think Crusher had been in three years, and Jay had just been in a year. But, yeah, those are my trainers.
two awesome guys. I never met them personally, but I've seen their work, and they're tremendous. Do you remember your first match?
I'll never forget my first match. Very first time, about 6 months after I started training, they were short a few people on a fans bring your weapons to an over-the-top battle royal.
Oh, boy.
I was hit by cookie sheets. Remember the old answering machines that had tapes in them?
Yeah.
I got hit by one of those trash can lids. I got hit by so many different things, and then I got tossed early. And I knew I was supposed to go early, but that I was under the guise of the gimmick called the Guardian. I looked like a big railroad crossing sign. It was pretty funny, but, and I knew I was supposed to go out early, but that to me, because I was still young in the business and I had a lot of arrogance. And I was like, I didn't want to get eliminated early. I wanted to showcase more of what I could do other than just getting beat up. But that's not how it went. So I got tossed, and I almost ripped my mask off that I was under, and I didn't. And I just walked back to the locker room. I sat down, I breathed through it. They came back and they said, a couple of them, my two guys were like, "Well, you seemed upset." I said, "I was just a little upset. I wanted to showcase myself more, but, I feel like I blanked out or I didn't do a couple things right. And I understand that I had to go early because I was young in the business. And it was easier to get me out of there faster than stay in there longer." And, they had to explain, why they had to toss me so early and, that it wasn't the right time for me to showcase any kind of talent, especially not under my own gimmick, because that gimmick was handed to me from Jay Kilgore to borrow until I built my own gimmick.
Right. Which, what you got today, man, it's perfect for you. What are some, other than I mentioned ICWF, what are some of the other promotions that you worked for over the years?
All right. Well, that match was Ohio Championship Wrestling way back before the guy who owns it now, was a different owner. I was their light heavyweight champion very briefly for a couple months, as the Guardian. And then when I did some gimmick changes, so it was OCW, I did their company for a while. And then, me and Jay had, some personal differences. I took time off because I did OCW from 92 until like 95. I took some time off because I couldn't find bookings after me, and Jay had that personal issue opinion difference. And I ended up not returning until 2003 for a company in Washington Courthouse that Crusher and Hammer were wrestling on called ACW in Washington Courthouse. Crusher put his neck on the line to get me back in the ring because I was driving 5 or 6 hours to come down to watch them wrestle from Michigan to Washington Courthouse. It was like a 5-hour drive. And after so much dedication, Crusher put his neck on the line for me, got me in the ring at ACW. So when I started developing my own gimmick and starting to go different places with it, after ACW was, that's where I ran into my tag team partner, the Canadian Classic Christian Steele. He said he had a promotion he was running with a couple other guys down in Cambridge, wanted me to come down, put on some shows down there. That would be CWA, the Continental Wrestling Alliance, and I wrestled for them. And then ICWF, where I met you and all the rest of the guys that are still around today that we know. ICWF, RPW 1.0, 2.0, and the RPW 1.0 and then 2.0. And then GWF a few years after RPW 2.0 died out. And then I went into the GWF, which was headed by some younger guys in the business. joined their company, you know, for two years or however long that company went for. And then during that time, my crusher told me, well, hey, IWA still around? Here's a contact. Why don't you contact Andrew Mackin, see if he can put you on a show? I came in for my very first show in February of 2018. It was during the Pandora's Box Battle Royal. I tossed you over the top rope. Then I got tossed by your partner at the time, was the American Patriot or the American Sniper, whatever his name was at the time. He tossed me after I tossed you. And yeah, that was my very first match in IWA. And those are companies and that I've worked for throughout my career, roughly.
Okay, what are some of the, what were some of your best matches and what were some of your worst?
Oh man. Some of my best matches, it seemed like I had when I wasn't blanking out against Eddie Insane, I had a really good match with him one time when I actually got aggressive and I was doing real well. And I was shoving Ref JJ around, which is where it all started with me picking on Ref JJ. I thought that was a really good match. Any match that I had with my partner slash rival, Christian Steele, was great. You know, because the majority of my matches in the first few years in down there in Southern Ohio was mostly against Christian Steele and his CWO, or however,
CWO.
Yep, in the Canadian World Order, spray painted my back and everything. My very first show, lost my title 15 minutes after being handed it. but yeah, I think some of my best matches. And now, while it's kind of an in-betweener, there was this match I had against this guy. His name was Buckshot Jones. We were both kind of in a bad place physically. I was getting ready to go for a surgery. I think Buckshot was sick, but he was part of the Enforcers. Had some real good points in that match where I bounced his head off of each corner of the post. Gave him a beautiful standing drop kick that I still got a photo of on my Facebook. That was kind of an in-between match. It was good, yes. And there were some bad points in it.
Yeah.
Probably some of my worst matches was towards the end of my tenure in IWA, because for some reason I just, either my heart wasn't in it or physically I just wasn't healthy enough. I think I had the most fun when we captured the IWA titles in that street fight match where Kodiak took the shot to his dome with the chair. And then there was that wonderful, wonderful street fight where the International House of Pain regained their titles back from the Black Label Rebels in the street fight match.
Yeah, oh my gosh. I still can hear poor Kodiak when he got cracked in the dome with that, man. That's, oh my gosh. And he took it like a champ.
Oh yeah, and if you look at my face in that video, you just see my jaw drop. I was like, holy hell.
Yeah, and that chair shot was intended for me. Luckily, I ducked out of the way, but poor Kodiak. Oh, wow. He, being a young guy, for him to take something like that, I mean, that speaks volumes on him.
He's a rookie with a lot of potential, man, and he's always absolutely willing to learn.
Always. Absolutely. And he reminds me of an old school wrestler. That's what, you know, this business needs. None of this flashy, you know, muscle head, you know, not knocking the muscle heads, but, you know, because, you know, I am what I am. But guys like that is what built, you know, the professional wrestling industry. You know, guys like Dick Murdoch and Dusty Rhodes and, you know, Manny Fernandez. And in my opinion, we need guys like that.
That's how I was trained, man. I mean, you know, I was trained in the old school style. That's why you've rarely ever seen me fly. And when I have flown, it wasn't pretty. I'll throw a second rope turnbuckle elbow drop, which I love doing. The one time that I climbed to the top of the turnbuckle and jumped on all the guys, Rozzy, my buddies from Michigan that I brought down. Oh, I forgot, Outlaw Pro Wrestling in Michigan. around 2008. I worked there too, another company up in Michigan, close to home. But yeah, good times, man.
Yeah, I still got that video. You know, jumping on everybody somewhere. But yeah, I remember the first time I was facing Admiral Payne. We was in Bysville. It was part of Jonathan By Day's. The village of Bysville has a little thing going on within their village, and Mayor Jay Jackson had us come in, do a wrestling show, being part of festivities. And I remember me getting up to the top rope, using my corner against Admiral Payne, and you told me I was crazy.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yep. That's the first time, the only time I ever did it. Luckily, I pulled the move off, but I'll never do it again.
Yeah, it's just like you'll never see me fly from the top rope again.
Right. But, man, but you talking about your drop kick, man. You got one of the most beautiful standing drop kicks I've ever seen. And you still can do it. I mean it. But
I appreciate the comment, brother.
Who are some of the guys you like working with in the ring?
Who are some of the guys I've liked working with in the ring? Man. I'll tell you this one story. And it was with my trainer, Jay Kilgore. And it's kind of a funny story. Probably one of the very first and few matches I ever worked in, because working against your trainer is always kind of nerve wracking because you're worried about what he's going to critique or what's going to go wrong. And everything went wrong. I was at Sports and Spuds in Columbus, literally my second match after that battle royal. I was under the guise of the Guardian. He was under the guise of his gimmick, the Dark Rider. They came out. My entrance for music was screwed up. I came out to Cat Scratch Fever. Not bad enough that it looked like a railroad crossing sign. Came out to Cat Scratch Fever by Ted Nugent. Not that it's a bad song, but not exactly a wrestling intro. Dark Rider came out to his Back in Black. We got in the ring, we locked up, and I couldn't hear shit in the mask. Couldn't hear a word. So to make the match look good, Jay had to take over, and he beat the ever-loving shit out of me, dude, which I deserved because I couldn't hear. I think I got maybe one move in, but yeah, I was so nervous. That was a fun match. I always had fun working with you and working against you. That was always a blast. It's always fun to get in the ring with good old Buckshot Jones. Then, you know, Christian Steele, he's a blast. Always fun in there. Always watching out, taking care of you. Robbie Rampage. Well, I love Robbie Rampage to death. Sometimes he forgets to slow down.
Yeah, but I think we finally got into his head to where he can pull off his moveset to where, you know, but he tamed it down. He backed off the gas pedal a little bit.
Yeah, but he was still pretty young in the business, but I liked working Corey. I mean Robbie Rampage. Because you'll never forget that time. We were working that match. It was me, him, Christian Steele, for some kind of title. I forget which title. And me and Robbie Rampage kipped up both at the same time, faced each other. That was a lot of fun to work him. Devin Station's been kind of fun to work from very few matches I've had with him. I do like working Kodiak. He's a good listener, so it's fun to work Kodiak. I liked that was a blast. James Ross Paradise, Jimmy Graves. He's a fun guy to work, even though it was just maybe one or two matches I worked with, maybe three matches I've worked against him in my entire career. The man's got talent beyond.
Yes, he does. I worked with him a couple times in tag matches. Yeah, I think the first time I met him, I told him he reminds me of Ming.
But, Jimmy Graves is, he's a hell of a talent. And inside that ring, he knows how to take care of you and he knows how to work. And, man, that's generally just about all my opponents that I really enjoyed working with. You know.
Yeah. Who are some of the guys you don't like working with?
Well, without saying too much about it, Vinny Violence under any of his gimmicks.
Seems to be a trend.
Yeah, I've heard that. I don't want to say nothing bad about the guy. Just that I don't really like working with him.
Right.
Rob Allen, I think is his name. He's got some rough patches. One guy that I don't think is still in the business anymore, and if he is, I haven't heard of him, was LF Favors.
Oh, gosh.
The man didn't want to give you any kind of headway to get your shine. It was all about him. But, yeah, not really a lot of guys I don't like working with. But, you know, I try not to disrespect anybody in the business as much as I can. I just say, hey, I don't really like working with this guy. But if I have to,
yeah,
I will.
Yeah, LF Favors. I remember Jim Davis, he was a promoter. I can't remember what town it was in. But just like the Montreal screw job, whatever town that was in, we called it that. He, for some reason, Jim, knowing that the head that he had on him, he got a big head, had a title saying no one's ever going to take it from him. He'll never drop it. Yeah, well, got in the ring with JT Storm. And, of course, special guest referee was Buckshot Jones. And just like the Montreal screw job, he put him in a sharpshooter. And I said, I don't think you're stretching him enough. I think we did that a couple of times. After that, I just finally called for the bell, and he just gave me that look. I'm like, what? And he didn't say a word. He just stepped out the ring and took his ball and went home. I think it's the last time we ever seen him or heard of the guy.
Yeah. Because I go back and I watch a video, because I got a video of a clip of me versus him on my Facebook. And, you know, you could see the spot where, I let him know, hey, I'm going to kip up. But he grabbed my leg out from under me and started pounding me. So, he wouldn't give nothing at all. It was all about him being, you know, doing whatever to make himself look better, not giving or helping the other guy to help us both look good and tell a story.
Right.
But yeah, that's not generally a lot of guys I don't like to work with, but there's a few.
It's pretty much the same question. Who do you refuse to work with?
Who do I refuse to work with? Gosh. Now, the thing about refusing to work with anybody is we're independent wrestling. It doesn't matter if I don't like the guy. It doesn't matter if I don't like how he works or I don't like his work ethic. I still will work him to be professional. I will never refuse to work with anybody. I mean, if LF Favors was still around, I'd probably refuse to work with him. Probably, maybe Guy O'Castle, but that's for a whole other different reason that I'm not going to go into. But, you know, he's a good worker. Don't get me wrong. He's got great work ethic in the ring, but he's just somebody I wouldn't like to work. But I wouldn't absolutely refuse to work with anybody except maybe a couple people, because in this business, you know, you're gonna run into those people you don't like, you don't want to deal with, you don't want to talk to, you don't want to definitely get in the ring with them. Right. But in the end, it's all about the wrestling and just trying to just get out there, showcase what you guys can do, try to tell a story if it's possible, if they're wanting to work with you. So I would very rarely refuse to work with anyone.
Any guys you like to work with you never worked with before?
One-on-one, I want to take on JT Storm. If he could ever get, you know, cleared to come back, I'd give him one-on-one, his one-on-one match that he's wanted with me for years. I think that'd be a blast. Trying to think here. Who haven't I really worked other than, you know, I mean, Storm for sure. Because, like, through all the companies that we were all in, and you were there too, was me and Storm never been in the ring with each other one-on-one. That'd be kind of like how for years when you were coming up, you were like, I got to take you one-on-one, Lion. We got to do it. Right? Yeah. Two of the biggest faces in the company at the time, whatever company it was. And when we did it, you were actually a heel on the Enforcers. And only cheer that I got was when I standing drop kicked you and smashed your face into the turnbuckle four times.
That, you know, nobody knew about that heel turn except for, you know, me and, you know, the booker. And, but somehow JT Hall, JoJo Little, and Bryce Bennett, they were at the show and they got one of it and they tried to tell him it's not going to work. Buckshot's too over. It didn't.
No, believe me, I know.
I got the faces booed. Even Brimstone, when I turned on him, he didn't. The Enforcers, which at the time was, you know, when that started, it was a Four Horsemen tribute group. JT Storm, Joe Black, the founders of the group, then Billy Violence. And Joe Black and JT Storm will tell you to this day, they kicked themselves in the ass for picking him. But at the time, he had the potential, and he was starting out pretty good. They were going to jump Brimstone after he beat JT Hogg for the heavyweight title, which I lost earlier that night in the match against JT for the title. Leaned over like me and Brimstone were going to make a plan to fight these three guys off, and I leaned over, told him to take a stunner to look on his face. I gave him the stunner. I think that's the first time I got booed. After I did about to that, you know, then he came back in the, you know, locker room and we gave him the beat down in the locker room and it just didn't work. So they went ahead and turned Brimstone heel and did the double turn, turned me face because they turned on me.
Yeah, I remember.
Then Brimstone had to have security walk him out to his car.
I remember that too.
I never seen. Brimstone was scared that easy. But yeah, he wasn't going out to his car. Yeah. There's actually people out there waiting on him.
I'd like to work Brimstone one on one because I never really got that chance either.
Yeah. But yeah, he's doing good. He's still thinking about getting back in the ring. He's just got to change his moveset and, you know, everything because of his neck. Because all the daredevil stuff he pulled throughout his career, you know, it caught up to him.
It always does.
Yeah. Now, you spoke of IWA, you know, which at the time was the granddaddy of independent pro wrestling in Ohio. How did you get back in? Was you there before when Bull Miller was there?
No, I was not.
How did you get into IWA Ohio?
Well, like I said, Crusher had mentioned to me. He said, "Look for Andrew on Facebook." He was the last person I knew who run it because Andrew was emailing Crusher. Him and Crusher were talking back and forth about me and Steel as a tag team. I messaged Mac, like, "Hey, you know, Crusher wanted me to message you. I'd like to come out and see if I can get into your company, give it a try." He had me come up first for the Pandora's Box thing. He said, "Are you available this date?" And I said, "Yeah, absolutely. I'll be up there to try that." And that's how I ended up there. I mean, mostly it was a really Crusher talking me up to Mac to get into IWA.
What was it like in the beginning when you got there towards the end?
Man, in the beginning, it was a great place to work. I mean, still all the talent was there that was there. They were super friendly, super accepting. You know, just welcomed us like we were one of their own. Everybody was willing to do the work, put in the effort. Now, towards the end, I wasn't sure, you know, really what was going on because, of course, I took that almost year off from IWA to do my own thing, run up and down the roads with some guys, try to expand outside of Ohio. If it wasn't for Steel, I've been told I wouldn't have been able to come back to IWA. He got us back in there. When I first came back, it was good. It was really decent. It seemed like a lot of the talent that was there when we first started kind of walked away. But it just felt like to me towards the very end of it, because I had the tag team title defense, me and Steel and Coach versus, you know, the Renegade Misfits for our titles, which we Eddie Guerrero'd the win with Coach to retain our titles. That was a great match. When I came back, and that was probably 3 or 4 months before the company started getting into shape. I came back, you know, 2 months prior, and then 2 months after that, and then it just seemed like there was, you know, one too many chickens in the hen coop, you know, so to speak. You know, it's just, you know, button heads and everybody trying to, you know, do their own thing, kind of like, you know, WCW did with, you know, letting wrestlers have total creative control, but some of them didn't have total creative control. And I felt like that was the kind of thing that was going on within management. Like, certain people wanted to control certain aspects, other people wanted to control more different aspects. One guy just wanted us to do the job, do the work. So I just think there was just too many button heads in management there, which really kind of changed the atmosphere, especially it changed the dynamic between people I had called friends and family for years, just because of things that were said or something, and the dynamic just changed. I never thought that it would change the dynamic the way it did, and I know I owe a lot of people an apology for the way I acted for that year when I was away. And I'll say right now, as I said on me and Kodiak's podcast, I do apologize for the way I was. There was just a lot of stuff going on and a lot of people, you know, attacking me for all the wrong reasons and not just attacking my character. They were attacking, you know, they weren't attacking my gimmick. They were attacking me personally. They were attacking my friend personally, his personal self. You know, right. And even work in the company. So there was all that going on, and it just, that kind of, you know, and that just made me feel like maybe I need to step away for a while, reevaluate what I'm going to do in the future. Wrestling for me in the future is still uncertain. I know I've promised a couple different guys I'd come back. Kodiak wants me to tag up with him for a little bit and wherever he's going to work, either Forge One or whatever, or and then I figure I owe somebody my retirement match, if not you, my partner, you know, Christian right. Steele, I owe somebody a retirement match. And then if JT ever comes back after I retire, well, even though I'm kind of semi-retired now, but if JT ever gets cleared to come back, I'd like to, you know, give him the match that he's always wanted, to give him his one-on-one.
Well, I'm going to go public too. You know, I apologize. You know, we were great friends for, you know, 15 years at the time, 16 years now, but we both have our personal issues, you know, outside of wrestling and stuff, and, you know, all the turmoil in IWA Ohio, and, you know, the way stories get extruded, you know, he said, she said, and, you know, when you get in that mentality that, you know, your home life's going to hell, then, you know, then you got locked. The place you go to get away from it all, you go through the same thing right there, you know, just too much turmoil. And so whatever differences we had, brother, I apologize, you know, and it was a kick in the gut to me, you know, that our friendship was at that point where it was. So whatever difference we had, I apologize for, brother.
Oh, hey, man. Like I said, it wasn't just you, dude. It was me. It was, you know, a lot of different forces that, you know, I had going on. And not just the guys I was running up and down the road with, dude. I had my life, you know, it was on the skids, dude. It was shit.
Yeah, you know, mine too. And, you know, and everything's going good for me now personally. And, you know, divorce is divorce. And, you know, it's number two. It's not going to be a number three because I ain't going to follow, you know, Ric Flair's footsteps.
But I thought you always wanted to be Ric Flair.
Yeah, you know, maybe catch, you know, his heavyweight title win, but, you know, matching him for marriages, that's never going to happen.
Oh, you want something. You know you do.
I don't know. I think the GOAT has been married, what, 6 times now?
7.
Seven, wow. See? Wow, but... I mean that's crazy. 7 times, man. That's
why he stays in wrestling, because he's too broke to do anything else.
Yeah, you get pay all that alimony.
Yeah,
but okay. Throughout your career, what titles have you held?
Oh man, let's see. Would you believe in my career that I've only actually held maybe 7 or 8 titles? I was light heavyweight champion for OCW. That was about 3 months I held that. I was CWA's United States champ for all of 15 minutes and lost it in my debut match, CWA, to, of course, Christian Steele in the Canadian World Order. Let's skip forward to ICWF. Well, there's a couple other companies. Damn, I forgot about the Outlaw Wrestling Organization. I was there. I was actually OWO's first world heavyweight champion, which I will never forget Jesse Law for allowing me to be the first guy to represent their company with that title. I loved that title, big and heavy, and you could knock the piss out of somebody with it.
Right.
Loved that. Was one of my first world title captures I ever had. ICWF's final show in Jackson Park. We had earlier in the 98 degrees that August.
Oh yeah, my gosh.
Outside, I wrestled against Admiral Payne, who hadn't eaten that day. So he was in a shape. So I had to kind of basically pull him through the match to make it last 5 minutes and then pin him. That was one of those matches. I love Admiral Payne to death, but that was not one of his or my greatest matches. You know, Christian Steele had just finished a match at the end of the show, and I had my little cash-in deal. I picked up the mic and I told him after he won, he better watch out because I was coming. He turned his back. I hit him with a reverse neck breaker. 1-2-3 pin. Final ICWF champion, heavyweight champion there. GWF, skipping RPW. I think we captured the tag titles, me and Chris, towards the end of RPW's final show. And that was I think that was against the Rainbow Warriors or the Jailbirds or somebody for a charity show for Chief Silverhawk. That was the first time me and Christian Steele captured tag gold. And then GWF, we were 2-time tag team champions there. And then IWA, we were two-time tag team champions there. And that's about it.
Yeah, I remember that match against Steele because he just beat me for the ICWF heavyweight title.
Mm-hmm.
Then you cashed in. And
yep.
Of course, playing along, you know, I picked up the belt and, you know, just kind of give you that look and that hush. Like, oh, what's Buckshot going to do? I just hand you the title. I mean, it was well-deserved.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because I remember I was like, because I saw you staring at it and kind of looking at me, and you're like, I was like, what are you doing, Buckshot? That's mine now. Let me have it. Talking to you in the ring and trying not to grin. I was like, you know, and I understood. But, yeah, man, when I first captured that title for the final champion of ICWF, I really appreciate that Steel let me do that. And then when you guys all came out and congratulated me for the OWO heavyweight title, that was fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I still got that. That's in one of my video feeds somewhere on my BSJ page.
Yeah.
So what do you think what's the difference with the business now on the independent scene from when you first came in compared to now?
I tell you what the difference is. In my eyes, the difference is this. Coming up, when I came up, training was a lot harder. And I'm not saying that training isn't hard for these younger guys coming up. There wasn't no developmental farming. You know, there was a couple farm feds in Ohio, HWA being one of them. But it really wasn't a designated farm fed to get into the bigger companies. But I'm not saying, like I said, I'm not saying these young kids don't have it hard when they're training now, but I guarantee it's not as hard as it was when I was coming up. It seems like they've got it a little easier, a little bit softer on the side of you know, discipline in the ring. But yeah, that's where the major differences lie, which, you know, these young kids come up and, you know, unless they know that they haven't trained enough, most young guys come up out of their school 3 months after, get a year into the business. I'm a vet. I've been in for a year. No, you're not a vet. You're just an experienced rookie. I've always been told that when you can say you're an official vet is 5 years in the business. You hit that 5 year mark. Yeah, you're a vet. You're a young vet. But these young kids now, they come up and want to be stars immediately. That's not how it was when I came up. When you come up, during the time I came up, it was, you're doing the job until we see something in you that shows us we can push you.
Right. I mean, you get these guys that, you know, that's, and now it's always high spot with these guys. And it's, there's no grappling anymore. There's no chain wrestling, you know, like it was. I mean, when you got trained by Kilgore and all them guys, I can't imagine. but working with you when I was getting trained, and Eddie Insane, oh my gosh, getting trained by that guy, you know, and Christian Steele, I mean, and Jesse Outlaw.
Yeah, you got to taste old school training.
Yeah.
That's sure. Why you are the way you are in that ring.
Well, I mean, and to learn to take chops, and you got to get that rookie chop, but oh my gosh, when you get, nobody has been chopped, you know, by a group of guys like we did with that rookie class. You had you had Christian Steele, and you had Eddie Insane. Oh my gosh, you know, getting chopped by you, didn't get finished shot by Insane. Oh, my chest looked like raw meat.
Yeah.
Oh, I still can.
I had a match in OAW against Kilgore and Scotty Vicious, and I took from him alone, from Kilgore, I took 50 plus chops in that match, dude. My chest looked like hamburger. And if you ever want to get chopped, you think mine, Steele's, Joe Black's is bad, Eddie Insane's. Now, I'm saying Eddie Insane is probably as bad as Kilgore, but I took 50 plus chops in that ring from Kilgore. My chest was, I went home and looked like raw hamburger on my chest. It was pink. It had handprints. I was beat the shit out of. Every time I took another chop, Scotty Vicious, I looked over at Scotty. He's like, oh God. Just see it on his face. Cause Scotty is one of the most comedic wrestlers you've ever worked in the ring.
Right.
And everything that he you know, reacts to is over dramatic. Like the time that me and him were in a match and I titty twisted him and he screamed like a girl. And
yeah.
He's fun. That. He's a fun guy to work just because he's funny.
Yeah. I remember working Scotty Vich and I grabbed his long goatee and yeah, talk about over dramatic. Yeah. It's hard to keep a straight face when you're working with Scotty. Just because, you know, the way what he does in the ring, I mean, it makes it fun, but you got to keep that straight face working with him. But
I kept a straight face working with him.
But yeah, I remember the one time I did get work for Eddie Insane, that's for RPW 2.0. We were in Roseville, and I knew them chops were coming. But yeah, a lot of people that knows Eddie. You know, Eddie put me over, and I'm thankful for Eddie for doing that. But yeah, he said, "We're in Rose. This is Redneck USA. Of course, I'm going to put the redneck over."
Yeah,
but it was fun working Eddie Insane. But when I knew them chops were coming, but
the only thing you could do was accept your fate because yeah. They were coming whether you wanted them to or not.
Excuse me, right? So what does the future hold for the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson?
Right now, I'm not sure, buddy. Like I said, it's uncertain. I know I owe a lot of people a lot of things. And I think, you know, like I said, my bump card's getting full. I was just diagnosed with, probably 6-8 months ago. I was diagnosed with degenerative disc disease in my neck.
Hmm.
So I figure if I come back, I owe maybe 4 matches, maybe 5. And then I need to step away and I just need to be either a behind the scenes guy or just need to be involved in it somehow in the business. Because I don't have as much love for it as I used to, even through like wrestling podcasts. But right now, it's kind of up in the air. The scales haven't tipped one way or the other. I'm still in the middle, and I hope to, you know, give people, you know, the matches that I feel that I need to have to finish out my career.
Yeah, I definitely want to have one more match with you. You know, daughter, she's starting to play softball now, and you know this is her first year. She's young; she's 8 years old, but she's loving it. As she gets older and as she improves, especially when she gets to the scholastic level, I mean, she's going to be traveling. So, definitely want one more match with you. You know, with my age and getting up there and my bump card,
we're getting old, Buckshot.
Yes, we are. You know, like I said, my daughter playing softball. I want to make those memories with her, but she's got a lot of potential.
Well, I'm not sure if your daughter's playing softball now. I want her to be ringside when we're beating each other up because she hit pretty hard when she was younger.
Yeah. But
if she gets older and stronger and then I start getting hit some more,
right.
She'll end up knocking me out.
My children, she's the only one that wanted to follow Dad's footsteps. Now, whether she wants to still pursue that or not, get in the ring. But I remember we were, that's when you made your heel turn. We were working each other, and it was in Zanesville.
Yeah.
At the James Singer Center. And, of course, my now ex and her were sitting front row. And you looked right at her, and you kicked me in my head outside the ring. And she got up, and her mother had to grab her by the seat of her pants and pull her back.
I saw that. Didn't you see me jump in the ring quick? Yep.
Oh, man. She is a daddy's girl. She loves her dad. She likes watching dad wrestle. But and you can ask RPW 3.0. We were doing a show there. Tommy Gomer Jr. turned on me. And she came back in the lock. She was sitting with Devin Station's fiance. Because, you know, me and my ex are very leery who we trust. And she wanted to go to the show. And so we sat her with, you know, Miss Dynamite, which is Devastation's valet, manager, fiance. We sat with her, and there was no stopping. She came back, and Tommy was at the bathroom, and she came back there looking for him. She was so mad, she had tears in her eyes, dude. Yes. And he finally came back, and either it was Nero or it was Guile Castle, said, "Brother, you're in trouble. So Buckshot's daughter's looking for you." Well, she finally came back, and he's in there. She started throwing popcorn at him. And she said, "You're lucky I don't kick you."
Jesus.
But, yeah, she was – oh, man. But,
your daughter's a dangerous fan.
Yeah, she's feisty. I'm glad. Hopefully she stays that way. That way, if any boys do get in line with her, then she can let them know what's up by knocking them on her ass.
She gets that shit from her father.
Any advice you can give these young cats that are coming in, guys and gals coming into the business, or thinking about coming into the business?
My ideal with any young guy coming up is listen, listen, listen. Always listen. You keep your ears open and your mouth shut. You learn what you're going to do. You take it. You learn that even though you're being criticized, that it's not a personal attack. It's something to make you better. But there's certain levels of criticism where some people have to stop so as to not to poison people on the business. But the ideal is to listen, develop how you need to develop, get your character developed, worry about your moves later that you're going to do, and just always listen. I was always taught one thing by Crusher and Hammer that I've said on previous podcasts, that hearts plus desire plus guts plus attitude equals success. And that is something I've carried with me through everything I've done. And if young guys coming up can learn to listen and learn to think after 1 or 2 years in the business, they are not God's gift to wrestling. They're just a younger advanced rookie that still needs to learn this business. Even as a vet, you're learning all the time. And if you're not learning, then why in the business?
Right. I mean, even old dogs like us still, you know, still need to listen to, you know, to an extent. I mean, you're always learning, like you said. I mean, there's always something new, you know. But now, speaking of podcasts, you started doing your own. Won't you explain something about your podcast?
Well, mostly it's just it's been kind of stalled because Kodiak has got all this stuff going on with his new baby coming in. We've done 2 episodes. We would have had 3 up. The second episode was supposed to feature Connor Cross, but during the recording, it just cut him off at 70 minutes, and then like nothing was there. Generally, we just talk some wrestling, we talk music, we talk, you know, like movies, video games, just shooting the shit about everything in general. And then mostly we start out with wrestling. If we have a guest, you know, ask them same questions you're asking. How'd you get in the business? What made you decide to get in the business? It's called Welcome to the Jungle because we're a lion and a bear. Hopefully me and Kodiak can get back into it. But like I said, he's got a lot of stuff on his plate right now. And I think he's working a lot of overtime at his job. And between overtime at his job and getting his lady to her baby doctor appointments, he's been super busy.
Right.
But generally, it's just about guys shooting shit about, you know, wrestling, whatever. Just having, you know, just doing what we can to, you know, talk about. And we always try to talk about the positive aspects of the business. We don't ever mean to try to diss anyone, and we try to keep it respectful. You know, if we do talk about the business, and then, you know, we just shoot the shit. Generally, that's what it is. Wrestling's part of it. Movies, video games, music, that's generally us, man, in a ball. It's called Shooting the Shit Podcast. But, you know.
Right. And you can find that on Anchor, right?
Yes, I can. Yes, you can. Absolutely. Welcome to the jungle. You'll find us pretty easily.
And the host, the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson, and the Kodiak.
Yep, it was Kodiak's idea. So, you know, I do the phone hosting. Kodiak does most of the question asking. I'll throw in a question or two. But, yeah, hosted by Kodiak and myself. Absolutely.
Well, congratulations to Kodiak and Brenda with their baby on the way. Yeah, I know. I mean, he's going to be new to fatherhood. You and I have been there. So, yeah, he's in for a whole new world.
He's going to have a son.
Wow.
I was joking with him on one of our podcasts. I was like, could you imagine what we're going to do to him when he gets older?
Yeah, I listened to the podcast. Yeah, it's – oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, hopefully he can have a second generation, you know, and, you know, continue that, you know, lineage.
Yeah, see, that's family. That's what I was hoping to do with Link, because every time you guys see Link, my boy who plays football, he's in his he's a junior this year, dude. He graduated in 2 years, and he's like 6'1" and 290.
Oh my gosh!
He feel like he's like 6 inches taller than me. Every time, like the last IWA show, I don't think you were there. You might have been watching it from the video. He grades horrible pixelated videos. But people like even Steel and most of the other guys in the back who know Link and knew how little he grew up from to how big he is now, they're like, right, when's Dad gonna start training you?
Yeah, I mean, oh my gosh. Seeing him at little and where he's at now.
Every bit of 6'1" and 290, and him in a football outfit in his football gear, man, he looks like, he don't even look like a kid no more, dude. It's like,
no, he's a grown ass man now.
Yeah, he looks, and you know, I'm teaching him how to drive, so that's a blast. But yeah, he is. If he could get in the ring, man, he'd be a force.
absolutely, sure. Man.
Especially if I trained him.
Right? Oh, man, you teach him that drop kick. Oh, my gosh. Somebody's yeah, they're definitely going to be going down.
If I can get Daryl Flint in the face, tall ass, I think teaching that to my son would be great if he decides to go in that direction.
Right.
Sometimes he says he wants to, and other times he says he doesn't want to. So,
yeah, you know, got one as a Marine. And, you know, he would just start, you know, working in the ring, and he caught on quick. But he's always been athletic. But like I said, he's in the Marines now, and doing good with that. And my oldest boy Nash, he's living in Alaska, making crazy money, working on a boat. And you got the two teenagers that are in high school. Then you got my daughter playing softball. So, yeah, they grew up quick.
Dang, Nash is – jeez.
Yeah.
I remember when they were nothing but little boys.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah. He's going to be getting married
he's getting married?
Here. And his plan – now, you're going to like this. His plan is – him and his fiance is – because the money he's going to be – he's making – getting married in Hawaii.
Oh, that's awesome. It's a beautiful place.
That's the tentative plan now. But, you know, within a year, things could change. And you know how it is with these young people now, him and his fiance. I like to thank you for taking the time. I know it's a rough time for you right now, but you did take the time to be on here. I appreciate it. I'm pretty sure your fans appreciate it.
Well, I told you I wouldn't let you down, BSJ, and, you know, that was my intention. Usually I set a goal for myself, or I say I'm going to be somewhere, I can goddamn guarantee you I'll be there.
Right. Well, my thoughts and prayers are with you and your family at this time. And like I said, brother, if you need anything, I'm a text or phone call away, man.
I appreciate it, brother. It has been a wonderful joy chatting with you and shooting the shit. And you take care of yourself out there, and hopefully we'll see you down the road or see you soon.
Absolutely. For the Hawaiian Lion, Rob Johnson, I'm the American Redneck, Buckshot Jones. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.